Hello, and welcome to episode 16 of series 5 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. Regardless of our age or when we started our working careers, we've all seen various evolutions and changes throughout them. We'll have seen introduction of new technologies, new ways of working, new philosophies, different approaches to the way we run our organizations and our teams. And so generational differences are nothing new. But I guess one of the things that we're starting to experience now is a deeper understanding of some of the generational differences that exist between, particularly between older workers and more younger workers coming into the job market. With that comes the risk of categorizing and generalizing, but it is important that we understand perhaps that younger people, coming into our workforce now, have had a very different experience to those that, like myself, who are getting to more towards the end of our working careers. So in this episode, we're going to explore one specific generation, whether you call them Gen Z in the UK or whether you call them Gen Z in the rest of Europe and beyond, and certainly in the United States. It's a generation that generally are accepted were born around between 1996, 1995 through to about 2010, or what we now call our Gen Z workers. And some of those now are into their mid to late 20s, and some of them are actually still in their teens and still at school, yet to come into the job market. So who are they and what sets them apart from other generations? And is there really a difference between what they need and what we needed when we started our careers, again, regardless of when that was? And if there is a difference, what can we do as leaders and organizations to better integrate our Gen Z, Gen Z workers into our workforce? We're also going to find out the shocking statistic that actually only a very small proportion of Gen Z workers have actually ever had any interactions in a work context with colleagues over 50. And what does that mean for the type of inclusivity that we have in our organizations, but also the ability to learn from each other's generations? So that's what we're going to be looking at in this episode. We're going to be engaging with someone who is an expert in this area, who's just written a book about this very subject. So I hope you find this an interesting and compelling discussion. Throughout her career, Anna Hislop found herself immersed in interactions with Gen Z, a new generation of young, energized, well-educated and tech-savvy freethinkers. With more than 15 years of experience, few professionals in the UK know more about the expectations and potential of Gen Z or Gen Z than Anna does. Anna provides bespoke trainings, talks and workshops to help organizations bridge the gap between their leaders and their Gen Z employees. Anna's new book, You Only Have to Ask, How to Realize the Full Potential of Gen Z at Work, dives into the strategies that help Gen Z grow self-motivation, engagement, and deliver excellent performance. So, good morning, Anna. How are you?
Good morning, Craig. I'm very well, thank you.
It's great to be speaking to you. Whereabouts are you in the world? Because we have our listeners are all over the world. Where are you at the moment, please, Anna?
I am based in Leamington Spa in England at the moment.
And that's for our international listeners, that's just, I guess, north of Birmingham, is that in the, yes. In the UK?
Right in the middle of the country.
Right in the middle. Yeah. So if you stick a pin right in the middle of the UK, it's not far away from Leamington Spa. So anyway, I gave an introduction there about your current work and career. Tell us a little bit about that career, Anna, but then also how your kind of interest in this generation that we're going to call Gen Z or Gen Z for our English listeners arose, and then we'll maybe go into defining a little bit more about who they are, who is Gen Z, Gen Z. But tell us a little bit more about your career first, please, Anna.
I will. First of all, thank you for having me here today and for your willingness to explore this topic of Gen Z in the workplace. So yes, my name is Anna Hislop. I am actually a Swede who made the big leap across the North Sea about 4 years ago. And I came here to live, to explore and enjoy the world of work and organizations. So I spend my days working in leadership development, in training and coaching. And I am also pursuing a master's in organizational psychology, business psychology. Yeah, and then I'm about to publish this book, which is very exciting.
Yeah, and that's imminent. And when this episode goes out, it will be literally the week after this episode. So if you're listening to this in real time, we'll give you all that information about the book at the end and where you can get a hold of it. But yeah, so very exciting times for you, Anna. And let's talk a little bit there about this mysterious group of people that we'll call Gen Z or Gen Z. And I guess you said, yeah, thank you for covering it on the show. I think it's more than a kind of professional interest. I have two offspring, I won't call them children anymore, who are in that category of being Gen Z or Gen Z. But let's define, what are we talking about when we're talking about that? Because I know people get confused about millennials and Gen X and yeah, all of these different categories. Who are we talking about when we're talking about Gen Z or Gen Z?
Yes, so Gen Z, they are the generation born between 1995-6-ish until 2010-ish. Mm. And I say ish because it's a little bit fluent and flexible in terms of exactly the years. And some people have different views on how to define generations. So so roughly those kind of years.
Yeah, and I guess 2010. Yeah, and I guess thinking now then in sort of 2024, and obviously people might be listening to this being in the future, which is great, but in 2024, so we're talking about people, young people around an age group of what, sort of 26, 27, all the way through to kind of pre-work age, I guess. So we're looking at sort of, 14.
The teenagers, the youngest ones at the moment, and they're just going through their senior education.
So really that on the cusp, that generation that are kind of, partly spanning that gap between it still being an education and those who are really early and some, I guess, who are kind of now quite well embedded into their careers. So so what is it that sets that generation apart? All generations are different. I guess that's why we have these labels and categories for them. But what have they seen or experienced that earlier generations may not have done that kind of gives them a unique set of challenges or opportunities?
Yes, that's a great question. And first of all, I just to like to start with a bit of a note of caution when it comes to describing a generation. It's essential, obviously, to recognize all of the complexities and nuances and generalizations and stereotypes, which we will be doing today or creating today. They offer broad insights. But of course, they fail to capture the full diversity and individuality of this generation. All of, each other's or every person's personal experiences, upbringing, background, they all kind of play a part in shaping their perspectives.
Absolutely, yeah. We're not compartmentalizing people here.
No.
We're just some recurring generic statistical trends.
But generalizations, they also serve a purpose, don't they? And they offer a value and they paint a picture and highlight these patterns that we're seeing in the society today. And these patterns can support the understanding and help to foster what I like to call generational intelligence. And that is where we have the capacity to both understand and appreciate the unique characteristics and values and preferences from different generations. And this is obviously not just about Gen Z. This is also about Gen X and boomers, to really appreciate what they bring to the table. And that one opinion is not necessarily more valid than the other. We're just different and we're shaped by the world that we grew up in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So on that note, so yes, Gen Z, I'd like to start to take you back, actually, Craig, to 2010, 2011. And this is when I first had my interactions with Gen Z. And this is when Gangnam Style dancers and videos took over the internet and the London riots were taking place. Osama bin Laden was shot and the iPad was released for the first time, So this was the time when I was first introduced to Gen Z. And I had been working as the equivalent of an A-level teacher for about 7 years before I met them. And when I met them, I quickly realized that my kind of teaching style needed to change. I had to be different to meet the learning needs of these new students. They had a very proactive approach to shaping their own experiences. They, instead of passively following the status quo, they actively sought to make their voices heard. And this was quite unique and quite inspiring for me. And they wanted to use their voice for something good. But they didn't hesitate to express their needs, whether it be mental health related needs, educational needs, or any kind of needs, really. And they made it very clear when they felt uninspired or unengaged. If I didn't ask for their opinion or didn't take their suggestions into account, their energy disappeared, their willingness to push through disappeared, and their motivation was completely gone. Mm. Mm. Yeah.
So that was a kind of an educational expectation or a way that they wanted to be engaged and communicated with that you detected there. Yeah.
And that was, of course, influenced by the world when they grew up and during their formative years. And they grew up in a time of uncertainty. And yes, many generations have certainly grown up in a time of uncertainty, and that shaped them and the way that they behave. So the uncertainties that was happening when Gen Z were growing up was the economic instability during the Great Recession, their parents losing their jobs or adults in their, you know, close proximity, the banks and the housing market collapsing. And as kids, they saw adults in their surroundings who had no trust in their employers, who felt that they were just a number. And adults who sacrificed a lot, and often to the detriment of their health, just to be a loyal employee, and yet they were treated in a way that meant the business weren't loyal to the employee. So that was kind of the climate that they were growing up in. And then, of course, we can add the growing concerns about the climate change and the environment. The focus on social injustice were huge during their formative years. Protests around the world demanding change, in the format of the Arabic Spring, Black Lives Matter, Me Too, really shaped their perception of the establishment, of the government and the role of the government, the police, you know, all of those institutions how they were reacting to these protests.
Yeah. And definitely, I mean, another thing I kind of, when I think back over that time, you know, it's interesting when you painted that picture of what was going on in 2010.
Yeah.
I mean, again, around that sort of period when my eldest was sort of around, you know, he was born in 98. So kind of that age when he was about sort of 8 and 9 was the sort of when the iPhone started to appear, and obviously smartphones have massively revolutionized the way that generation, you know, so the youngest, sorry, the oldest in that generation just saw those coming in, as whereas the kind of the older people within that, the older, you know, kind of those 14-year-olds that we said it right, who were born right at the end of that kind of Generation Z period, would be, for them, it would have been kind of, you know, standard of technology. It was, you know, it was nothing new. It was everybody with these things must have existed forever.
Yeah.
And that's been a huge transformation for that, you know, just spanning that generation alone, let alone the fact that that's a very unique phenomenon. I think that access to information and ability to communicate so quickly and easily with each other and with the world is hugely unique, I think, to that generation.
You're
in terms
absolutely
of that.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
And it really shaped their lives, their education as well, and their development. And this is showing up in the workplace, and we'll get into that more soon.
Yeah, but of course, yeah.
This generation, they've grown up with TED Talks. You know, and the quality of training and different medias and podcasts or video education, YouTube, they go looking for whatever they want to know. They'll find it on YouTube, and they're self-educating themselves. So yes, this is the first fully digital generation. And of course, that comes with a load of opportunities, but also a load of challenges when it comes to the social media, the bullying that started online during this generation's formative years. And that also shaped the education system. So, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion was a really big part of their day-to-day. The anti-bullying, the talk about respect, talk about sex and relationship education.
Okay, so, I mean, what is the data telling us? And there's obviously a lot of research and been done, and a lot of kind of, you know, whether that's formal research or just kind of observational research. What is that telling us about that generation? And I guess kind of starting to move the conversation into now, well, what are some of the implications for what this generation, again, using that generalization warning and caveat that they're wanting as employees, and therefore, you know, what are leaders of Gen Z people experiencing? And you experienced it, obviously, as a teacher, as you said, it was your kind of my experience that you kind of realized there was this thing going on. But what are some of the background research, and also how does that then kind of lead into what we need to be thinking about as managers of Gen Z employees?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'll just start very generally there, and actually pick up on the media narrative here and what many employers are saying. They're painting the picture that Gen Z they're being entitled, they're having unrealistic expectations, they're impatient, and they're really difficult to manage. So that's what I see in the press, online, and when I speak to leaders in different organizations, almost on a daily basis. So that's their reality. And then when I speak to emerging leaders, talents, etc., Gen Z, they arrive in the workplace and they notice a massive clash of expectations. They speak of uninspiring leadership. They speak of poor development opportunities and a lack of trust. And they're claiming that they're not getting enough feedback. They feel questioned when they try to set healthy boundaries, etc. And they sometimes feel undervalued and unfairly compensated. So that's kind of the reality that we're trying to manage in today's workplaces, these different perceptions of what work is about. And it's creating some really interesting discussions. And I also believe that it highlights something quite important. So Gen Z's entry to the workforce draws attention to some areas that might have been overlooked, or some aspects that have been ignored in the work environment, and they're highlighting that. So what they're asking for is continuous training and development. And as I mentioned earlier, they grew up with TED Talks. They're used to bespoke learning situations from their school and the education. They had individual support. They got used to these learning adjustments based on their individual needs. And the teachers, they were educated about neurodiversity and how to work with students with different diagnoses. So that was kind of the reality when they were growing up. They were used to this sort of one-to-one support in some instances, and regular developmental feedback based on their own individual goals. So clear expectations, super clear criteria for success. And this also obviously created quite an individualistic and competitive environment when they were growing up. And this has also been transferred into the workplace.
Yeah. And yeah, that's really interesting. I'm kind of reflecting on that, because I mean, you know, a lot of I get frustrated, and, you know, I'm not naming any individual clients, but I get frustrated when I hear, you know, clients using performance management processes that are really just geared towards, you know, kind of procedural compliance and ability to be able to say that they've kind of ticked boxes and not, you know, kind of thinking about it as a process to develop and grow and individualize, you know, kind of development plans based rather than just, you know, ticking the box and sheep dipping people. So I can imagine how for a generation that's kind of grown up with that expectation, that can be particularly frustrating, because it frustrates me, and I would hate it if I was working in that sort of environment as well, both having to administer that sort of thing and also you know, having to be on the receiving end of it as well. So I can really imagine how that would go. What about because again, as I say, I think you're right. I think there's a kind of, you know, there's this horrible kind of snowflake term that gets thrown around, and that really, really frustrates me. But this idea that they've kind of, you know, they're privileged and they're kind of, had it easy. But I mean, you know, when I think of my youngest who left home, went to university in the middle of COVID and, you know, and had all of that to deal with and had to kind of learn to cope with that. I guess just reflecting on the kind of the world that how that's changed recently in those last 5 years and that kind of ability to work from home and that autonomy and that ability to do that. And now this kind of expectation that people go back to offices in inverted commas. Well, what's that impact been, particularly on this generation who kind of lived, maybe some of them lived the pre-COVID world and some of them have just all their, you know, their working life or university or adult life, they've known is that kind of COVID and after COVID or just after COVID. What's that, how's that impacted in your opinion on that generation?
I think it's had a massive impact, to be honest, Craig. And I think that we as the older generations in the workplace will need to step up and support this generation to catch up on what they missed out on. And with that, I mean the developing some of the soft skills, or what some people choose to call soft skills, like communication, conflict management, negotiation, or, you know, how to interact in an office environment with other adults. They haven't had the chance to practice that because they were at home in their little student dorm doing classes online and you know, not having great quality education either during those
absolutely
years.
Absolutely not, no, yeah.
And yes, together with a big kind of desire for being trusted and having autonomy in the workplace, this creates a conflict for Gen Z generally. And many Gen Zs say that, yes, they want flexible work hours, absolutely. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they want to work from home all of the time, but they want to have the autonomy to choose when is the right time to go in. And when a business tells them you need to be in on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday every week, that shows a lack of trust for Gen Z. It shows that they're not trusted to do their work and to accomplish what they need to accomplish. And that is the main reason why there's resistance there. It's not because they don't want to go into the office. It's the fact that they don't feel trusted when they're forced to go into the office. And trust is one of the biggest, admired qualities when it comes to leadership and relationship with managers. They really do want to feel trusted, and so that's big. The other thing, obviously, is the way that the work environment has changed in the last few years. And Gen Z, some people say they're expected to retire when they're about 80. They're expected to have 17 different employers during their career, and they're even expected to have 5 different careers. So that's also driving, and maybe Gen Z, I'm not aware of this on an individual basis, but it's still that's the sentiment of their working life. And this drives that desire for training and development and to constantly upskill themselves because they don't know what's around the corner. They don't have that sense of security with employment because they've seen it so many times before. Companies going bust, industries cutting down. You know, the tech industry at the moment is really downsizing, isn't it? So that's the reality that they're living in, and they need to equip themselves. And again, going back to their education, individualistic and competitive, they feel a need to drive their own progress, and they drive it quite hard.
I totally agree. I mean, I've always been, not just for Gen Z, I've always been a great believer. I mean, I it's really interesting you say that about that, you know that the fact that how many different jobs they're going to have and how many different employers they're likely to have over the course of their career. And you know, if you think I mean, I don't fit this mold, but I'm a Gen Xer. And if you think about my generation and certainly the generations that went before it, it was, you know, you're kind of with an employer for life, or you're with a career for life. And you kind of, you know, when I think about my dad, who's, you know, kind of born in the 30s, he did his apprenticeship and he worked 40 years. I mean, there was a lot of technical change that went on during his time there. And what he started doing was different to what he ended up doing. But the actual purpose of that job was the same. It was just the way he did it changed. So he had basically did the same thing for 40 years. Mm. And now that for me, that, you know, that is a really weird thought. But for this generation, I mean, it's even more weird. And I think, you know, when I think about it, and I've always thought this anyway, is that, you know, the organization, the psychological contract that organizations should have with their employees is that, you know, we recognize that this might only be a temporary relationship, but how do we get the best out of that for each of us? So that means, you know, we'll develop you and grow you, you know, like, I can't remember, it's a Richard Branson saying, isn't it? Train people like they're going to stay, or treat them like they're going to quit. I can't remember which way around it is. But anyway, it's like basically give them all the skills they're going to need to help them leave if they want to, but actually treat them like you want to keep them.
Yeah.
And have that kind of relationship with them. And to do that, they need to, you know, listen and learn, but also give you their 100% of effort. And I think if you've got that kind of psychological contract, it's symbiotic then, rather than we're tied to each other and chained, you know, I'm chained to this job and I can never do anything different. And I think for Gen Zs, you know, when I think about my two, that's kind of, I hope that's the kind of philosophy they have with their careers going forward as well. If, you know, not that I don't think either of them, well, particularly my youngest is going to have a conventional career. They're going to be like me, I think. So,
If you add the desire of doing meaningful work as well, which this generation really have, and I'm going to give you some numbers now, and that's all based on Gallup, the State of the Workforce, and Deloitte, the Gen Z and Millennial Survey they do every year, and also Randstad's numbers. So that's kind of where I'm collecting these statistics. So 50% of Gen Z would leave their jobs if they didn't find it fulfilling. And with fulfilling, they mean if there's a lack of growth and learning or no meaningful contribution. So it's more than just the work you're doing on a daily basis. You want it to be serving a greater good.
Yeah.
And with that, obviously comes a bit of stress and burnout, etc. So 46% say that they feel stressed, anxious, or burnt out on a daily basis due to the intensity and the demands. So that's a massive conflict here, wanting to do meaningful work but not really being able to do that and to have a career that ticks that box. It creates stress and it creates anxiety. And if you add sometimes the work environment with managers just focusing on the results, a poor work-life balance, and then, you know, financial struggles, they're huge for Gen Z.
Absolutely.
And I think about 40% have taken a side job because they need another income. And then if you then also add unhealthy team dynamics, harassments, and microaggressions. So 6 out of 10 Gen Z have experienced this in the last 12 months. And this is an example of how their upbringing with diversity, equity, and inclusion being a part of their DNA, they see that as a hygiene factor for work. They just expect it to be there. And when they notice that it's not, it's a massive conflict for them. So that kind of harassment and microaggressions, what we thought was okay in the past is no longer okay. And that's adding to their stress and burnout. And as I mentioned, the financial side of things, 61% say that it's harder or impossible to buy a house for themselves. Mm. And 50% says it's harder or impossible to start a family compared to, you know, one or two generations ago. So that is top of mind for them, for sure.
So just, I mean, I think we've covered some of this by implication then, Anna, but in terms of organisationally, you know, a lot of our listeners are working in OD and comms and L&D and HR, and whilst they may be able to influence, you know, if they've got Gen Z employees directly in their team, there's stuff there they can kind of maybe reflect on. I guess when they're working at scale, though, when they're responsible for kind of cross-organisational programmes or initiatives, what are some of the things that, again, you know, they're all probably acutely aware of the need for diversity and inclusion in what they're doing, but I guess I don't know if generational diversity is something that is as much, you know, kind of visibility or awareness, and I think that's what we're doing here is as much as other forms of diversity and inclusion. Well, what are some of the things that they need to be maybe thinking in or factoring in order to be able to make sure that Gen Z employees are able to kind of, you know, we're helping them overcome some of these issues that maybe we've inadvertently created.
Yeah. So I'd say it's about checking in on their feedback culture is one very kind of concrete thing. 43% expect regular real-time feedback from their manager. And when they say regular, they mean once a week on average. And most companies aren't working to that target. The other thing is to recognize that trust, support, and care are considered to be the top leadership characteristics for this generation. And I think that could possibly shape the way that we lead in our businesses today, and to be aware of that and to consider that when communicating with this generation. 30% say that they would work even harder if they had a supportive manager, for example. Mm. And 37% say that they would leave if the support was missing. Mm. Yeah. So there's a lot in that, in terms of how we lead and how we manage. The other thing that's really important is the recruitment process. Talking about the business mission, their values, what they want to achieve and how they do it, what the flexible work situation is looking like. And my invitation here is to be honest with how they're working, because if there's something that Gen Z reacts to, it's fake messaging and, you know, promises that they don't live up to and cultures they're striving to but currently don't have. So be honest with that and have a good onboarding process where they can, you know, set themselves up for success. It's not about hitting the ground running necessarily, but it's about getting all of the information in different times, in different types of media. It could be video clips, it could be face-to-face meetings, it could be online meetings, a variety of onboarding options to really understand what the business is all about. The other thing, connecting to what you said earlier, Craig, about the generational diversity in the workplace, it's about creating opportunities to learn from others on the job. Maybe reversed mentoring is quite popular at the moment, where senior leaders can actually learn from younger employees as well as learning from the senior and more experienced leaders. And opening up for conversation and understanding. Gen Z, they're used to being a part of decision making. Back at school, there were teacher surveys, there were evaluations, there were committees, there were, you know, councils. They had a say and their voice mattered, and they want that to be the same in the workplace. So creating that environment where communication can take place. And there was an interesting LinkedIn survey about this, actually, with 1 in 5 Gen Z workers reported that they hadn't had one single direct conversation with anyone over 50, unless it was their boss.
Yeah. No, I was going to ask you about that, because I found that fascinating as someone who's over 50. The thought of not, you know, and obviously I interact with my own Gen Z offspring, children. I always hate calling them children because they're not anymore.
But, young adults.
Young adults. I think that's really, I find that really, it's not disturbing, that's too strong a word, but I find that really unusual. And I think I really like your suggestion there around encouraging that equity. So just because I'm older than you and I've been here longer than you, and I might earn more than you by virtue of that fact, that I have, you know, you need to listen to me and I've got nothing to learn from you attitude, rather than seeing actually that kind of symbiotic relationship, which is, you know, things, you can do things with technology, and you know, you have a greater understanding of so many different areas than I do. And I do this all the time with my young adults, you know, is when I'm struggling with, you know, how do you use this? I don't get TikTok, explain it to me. I'm not going to use it, but I just want to understand it so I can interact with people who do use it. And therefore you hope that it's, you know, and then they'll hopefully listen to me when I give them a bit of advice on something that, you know, I think, you know, here's something to think about and take it or leave it. Yeah. So I think that in an organization, I can imagine how that would create a really, really healthy culture where everybody feels valued. Nobody feels more important than the other, each other, but also we're learning, you know, I'd love to learn from a Gen Z person about loads of stuff that I know they know that I don't, and for them to teach me, and for them to, you know, equally to be responsive to stuff that I might be able to help them with that might sort of iron out some of their pains and you know, give them a shortcut to what they're trying to achieve and save a bit of time and friction. So I really like that idea. And
and if we just think about this for a minute, then in a couple of years' time, they will make up 30% roughly of the world's workforce. And
of course,
and in some areas they will make up even higher percentages, like the Latin America and Africa, for example, with 50% of the workforce. But this also means that they are 50/30 or whatever percentage of the consumers in the world.
Yeah.
And if 55 plus year olds are setting the strategies and the product development, etc., then and not being interested in even communicating with their own colleagues. So 40% of those over 55 hadn't spoken to a Gen Z colleague in the past year either. So it's that kind of lack of interest. But it also means they don't necessarily understand their customers. So that's
very
another
much so.
Little twist to it.
Anyway, Anna, we could talk about this all day. I want to make sure we've got enough time to talk about your book. So tell do you want to read out the title again? Because I read it out earlier and it'll roll off the tongue more easily for you. Tell us about the book and tell us a little bit more about what it includes and how our listeners can use it if they get a copy of it.
Yeah. So it's called You Only Have to Ask: How to Realize the Full Potential of Gen Z at Work. And the word realize here is actually quite important because it has two meanings. First of all, it's the meaning of realizing that this generation has something to offer that is important for all of us. So realizing that. And then the second part of the meaning is, you know, understanding how to realize it, how to make it happen, how to get the best out of this generation. And given what we now know about what shaped Gen Z and how they show up at work, it makes complete sense that they won't respond well to traditional management styles. And just like I had to adapt my teaching style back in 2010, we also need to adapt our leadership and management style to meet this generation's needs. And when I speak to senior leaders about this, you know, some of them absolutely get it, both emotionally and intellectually, logically, but they don't know how to to make this change. And often that means they don't make the change. And often it means then that Gen Z employees are leaving their business, and often without telling them why, because that's Gen Z traits as well. They don't want to speak to these older people and give the reasons. So that's why I believe this book is so important, because it gives the framework to follow as a manager. And it's all based around communication. It's 8 questions that we all ask ourselves that we want to have the answers to. We might know the answers, but we'd never share it with the leaders, or the leaders don't ask us as employees. So the first question is, do I really understand what is expected of me? And that has so many levels to it. You know, if you think about it, your boss, your team, your peers, your customers, admin office, who am I serving, and what are the expectations of these different functions?
Yeah.
Do I know why it's expected of me? So what about me makes me the right person to do this job? And why should I do it? You know, what is the big picture? And you, again, you're the expert on this, Craig. Does it align with what I want to be doing? Do I agree? That's the third question. And that talks about the mission and the vision. Who cares about the work that I do? That's a massive thing for Gen Z. And can I do what's expected of me? So that talks about, you know, the things needed for feeling a feeling of self-efficacy. The processes, are they in place? Do I have the right training to do my job? Do we need the whole team to get engaged, etc.? So the question of can I do it, involves those different pieces. And then the sixth question is around, am I confident doing what is expected of me? And that talks about the stretch zone and when we're in the when we're kind of moving into the panic zone almost in different parts of our role, etc. And we, Gen Z, they don't put their hand up to say, I'm struggling. They suffer in silence.
Right.
And this is why it's so important for the manager to recognize this and to start asking these questions.
Right.
The seventh is do I know how I'm getting on? So that's connecting to the feedback culture and the importance of getting feedback. And then the last question is, am I happy with what I'm getting out of it? So the rewards, the benefits, the financial side of things. So those are the eight questions, and it's packed with strategies and questions that you can use to get to know your Gen Z employee and understand why this is so important for them.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I really like those. I love those questions. Some of those are actually not dissimilar to ones we use when we're asking clients to articulate their big picture. You know, what's changing? Why are we doing this? How are we going to do it? And then similar to one of your questions there, the final question is, are we serious? Because it's very easy to profess, we're aiming to be this and we believe in this and our values are this, but actually, are we actually doing that? And are we walking the talk? And where are we not walking the talk? Because I think it's very easy to, kind of stand in your soapbox, but actually, the behaviors that either demonstrate or undermine that are really important as well. So it's really interesting to see how that on an individual level, not same, but similar kind of, really testing, and really great coaching questions as well. So I really like those questions. So we're going to put some links into the show notes. So we've got one for Amazon where you can buy the book there, and one for Routledge as well. Mm-hmm. And the book is available from, can you remember me the date? 22nd of July. So this is going out, if you're listening real time, I know our listeners kind of listen to this sometimes in the future. So if you're listening to this after the 22nd of July, did you say? If you're listening to this after the 22nd of July, then you'll be able to get the book. If you're listening to this on the day it's gone out, then you may, I guess it's available on pre-order and you can get it. So yeah, that sounds like a great read, and I'll be looking up my copy of that. We're also going to put in the show notes a link to your LinkedIn profile, Anna, if that's okay, just so people want to speak to you directly, they can reach out and have a conversation with you. Are there any, and if there's any other links you want me to put into the show notes, Anna, just let me know, yeah?
Yeah, sure.
Cool. And also, and just a reminder to listeners, if you're looking for the show notes, sometimes they show up on iTunes and Spotify, but if you want the show notes in their unredacted version where you can find all of the links and click on them, you need to go to engagingic.com, find this episode in our podcast list, and you'll find in the show notes on that episode all of the links if you can't find them in iTunes or whatever platform you're listening to this on. So anyway, well, I really I really love that conversation. And as I said, I'm kind of getting more into having conversations on the show that with people that you know, not to say that previous guests haven't been in the areas of interest, but this for me was really fascinating given my, you know, as I say, my own sort of personal relationship with two Gen Zs and also, you know, a fascination in that being in that sort of age group where, you know, according to that research you cited earlier, that who have limited contact with them in a working context, which, you know, I think was really, really intrigued me. So, well, look, I wish you all the best with the book. And obviously, again, we're talking a few weeks ahead of launch, but in real time when the show goes out, a good luck next week. I hope it all goes really well and you get a great and have any plans for promoting the book? Are you having a book launch or how are you doing that?
We'll be doing all of that. Nothing is in the diary yet, but we'll be planning ahead something for September probably because it's coming out in the height of summer.
Yes, absolutely. I know when I wrote a book a few years ago and a long time ago actually now, and doing the book launch was really good fun and doing that well after the actual book's available is nice. You can have a bit of a party and you've passed all of the kind of stress and worry of getting it out there. So no, that would be great to do. So I wish you all the best for that, Anna. So lovely to speak to you. Really enjoyed that conversation, and maybe at some point in the future we'll catch up with you and both in terms of your emerging insights into this amazing and fascinating generation, but also your own kind of personal journey as well, and we can have a reconnect and talk about that.
That'd be lovely.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much again on behalf of me and the listeners, and take care, Anna. Have a great weekend because we're speaking on a Friday, and speak to you soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.